Getting used to the altitude here, so I shouldn't have gotten up so quickly. Whoa. Just join me in a moment of quiet. I have a wonderful little duplex in Marmalade, where I'm living, that this wonderful woman here helped me find. And last Friday evening, I was in my kitchen, and I was making some soup, curried butternut squash soup with coconut milk. I was standing there over the stove, stirring the onions and celery, and was about to add the curry. And suddenly, seemingly out of nowhere, a realization came into my consciousness. And that realization was that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. could not have done what he did had he not been a man of faith, a person of faith, or something like that. But it was so clear, it stopped me in mid-pouring of that curry. He could not have accomplished what he did or been as effective as he was without his deep faith. He was a great man because of his discipleship, of his witnessing for his faith, which he then put into action in hope of bringing about racial equality in this country. Work that is still in progress, and in so doing made this country such a much better place for all of us to live. Agreed? Agreed. So 50 years ago, on the night of June 21st and into the morning of June 22nd, three American civil rights workers, James Earl Cheney, Andrew Goodman, and Michael Schwerner, were murdered by members of the Mississippi White Knights of the Ku Klux Klan outside of Philadelphia, Mississippi. The three had answered Dr. King's call to action, had been working in the Freedom Summer campaign, attempting to register African Americans to vote. 50 years ago, these three young men, two white, one black, two from the north, one from the south, two Jews and one Christian, were witnessing to their faith and beliefs by working on the ground for justice. 50 years ago, these three young men found the inspiration and courage because of their faith and their long heritage in their families about social justice, and along with the inspiration of Dr. King to keep on registering black voters despite the threats that had been made against them. They died martyrs. Freedom riders. I don't know about you, but I don't know if my faith is strong enough to face what they were facing that night in 1964. I like to think that the courage of my convictions would catapult me over my fears and compel me to witness for justice. But I don't know. The closest I ever came to being really fearful when standing up to the power of empire was in the early 90s when I was in ACT UP in Chicago, the AIDS Coalition to Unleash Power. I was an activist. It was in 1999, and Vice President Dan Quayle was coming to the state Republican dinner at a large hotel downtown. I don't know whatever happened to Dan Quayle. He was our vice president, for you younger people, with the elder George Bush. One of the members of our ACT UP group, through her Republican uncle, had gotten a hold of some tickets to go inside. So while the majority of people were outside demonstrating, four of us dressed in suits in order to pass, a couple of women, a couple of men entered unimpeded with our tickets. Now, my activism at that time was propelled by my anger anger, hot, burning coal anger. I had abandoned my faith, and if asked, I would have probably said I was an atheist. It was a scary, awful time. My anger and outrage was all I had to go on. So another guy and I found our way to two empty spots at a table. We introduced ourselves, shook hands, and sat down making small talk while we ate, my heart pounding in my chest the entire time. While dessert was being served, Mr. Quayle was introduced and took the podium. Beforehand, we had decided to let him speak for a few minutes, and then we would disrupt his speech and hold up our signs that were hidden beneath our shirts, unfurling them as we stood. My compatriot got up, and so did I. People looked at us. He then stood up on his chair and started shouting. I stood up on my chair and started shouting, and then he put one foot atop the table, ready to stand there, and I froze. I was afraid. And I had nothing to buoy me up and support me or protect me. Anger only goes so far. Today, I know that things work better. Things work as they should. Things work for the greater good when I turn my will over, when I turn the whole process over, that process and that outcome over to God. But sometimes I still forget. Can anyone else here today relate to that? Oh, good. Oh, thank God. Oh, I hate being the only slow learner. So anyone here work in an office? Yeah, more than a few people, yeah. Maybe you've been asked at some time to do something that you knew was not quite right. Anyone ever been in that position? You know, maybe borderline unethical, maybe not immoral or illegal, but it still leaves you feeling a little bit unsettled. Yeah. You know, I know someone in the East who works in human resources. And 2 years ago, he was instructed by the department head to help with the downsizing of the company. And he was instructed by management to pick people to receive the pink slips who maybe didn't fit in real well or into the corporate culture, who were different. You know where I'm going with this? Yeah, it was never said with so many words, but he got it, and it was terrible for him. I've known people who have worked for Duke Energy in my old congregation who were implicitly tied to falsifying documents in order to satisfy the government. That was a terrible position to put them into, and they did not know what to do. They weren't able to stand up for themselves. Also, one of my sisters worked for a for-profit college for a while, and they wanted her to cook the books, altering them to make the graduation rate appear higher than it actually was. There's lots of possibilities out there in our cutthroat capitalistic culture. Or how about the youth in the congregation today? Maybe at your school there's that kid that's maybe a bit troubled, socially awkward, doesn't communicate very well, isn't one of the cool kids, doesn't have friends, he's not involved in activities, gets bullied a lot. Maybe one day you come to school late and you pull into the parking lot having to park at the far end, and there is that kid surrounded by kids being taunted, being belittled. What do you do? Our Christian faith can help us with all these dilemmas, all these situations, at home, at work, at school. Today's gospel reading is all about discipleship, how to live out one's faith and to witness to that faith no matter what. There are a collection of sayings by Jesus that were gathered by the writer of Matthew from many different sources and put into a narrative form that would speak to the second generation Christians who, being Jewish, were still part of the greater Jewish community. However, inspired by the teachings of Jesus, were prompted to spread the good news, not just within their own communities, but also outward to the Gentiles. What I would like to show is how these same teachings are a guide to life in general, and how to practice, for us to practice discipleship in our everyday lives. How can we seek to be faithful to God's call in our life? That's a question. And the answer is by putting God first. By putting God first. Now, we're not going to go through all of those that were read because there are too many and they're not all applicable to what I want to teach this morning. But let's look at the first one. They're going to be up on the screen so you can, I don't have to read them all, but it says, don't let people intimidate you. Okay? It's not easy being the first one to speak out, is it? It's not easy being that one to rise up out of the insanity and say, wait a minute. Something's wrong here. I mean, think about the social movements in history where activists were vilified, where they were persecuted, but then what they were bearing witness to gained traction. And more people got on the right side of history. I love that expression, the right side of history. I'm thinking of the abolitionist movement, women's suffrage. Those were deeply unpopular movements, and it took decades, if not more than a century and a half, for things to be changed. The civil rights movement in our contemporary country, the Vietnam War and other wars, LGBTQ rights, marriage equality. Somebody had to stand up first. And then a few people and more people, and it was scary. And there's some new movements that are just starting out. I'm thinking of the animal rights movement. It's not real popular, but more and more people are bringing our attention to it by standing up and saying, wait a minute, why do we treat other living beings this way? Okay, so speak truth to power. So many of the leaders in those movements were inspired by their faith. They were empowered by their faith. So don't be intimidated. Know that God is calling you to work for her, on her behalf, okay? Know that. Don't hold back. Shout it out from the rooftops, like it says in the verse. And then next, it says, do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather fear the one who can destroy both body and soul in hell. That in hell thing, I'm just going to ignore, okay? It means many things. So, but it says, do not fear, right? That's what I got out of this. Everyone else, do not fear. In the Bible, over and over and over, hundreds of times, in fact, it says, do not be afraid. Be not afraid. So we got to listen to that. People of faith, which is us folks sitting here today, we know that we're not just our bodies. We know that we're not just our bodies, that even though our bodies can be hurt or destroyed, our souls and spirits are eternal. Eternal. That's what made Rosa Parks sit where she wanted to on that bus. That's what made Mahatma Gandhi walk all the way to the salt mines barefoot. That's what made Nelson Mandela be able to sit and rot in that prison for so long. That's what made all these heroes, many known, many more unknown, to be able to stand up to tyranny. Because they knew they were more than their bodies. They had an eternal soul. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says to Arjuna that we are imperishable. He says, when you die, it's like taking off one set of clothes and then putting on another. We never go away. We always exist. And then in the line when it says about the one who can destroy both body and soul, you know, maybe some people think that refers to Satan. I don't spend a lot of time with Satan. But I think that means those things which take us outside of universal love and separates us from God. False idols, materialism, consumerism, nationalism, those things that we put before God, those things that we put before God will kill our souls oftentimes. You know, in recovery, in the 12-step programs, it says that there's things worse than death. Anyone agree? There are things worse than death. There's the walking dead. You know, zombies are really popular right now. What do you think? They're soulless walking dead. There are other things worse than death. But if we act as though we do not have fear, we will be successful. What is that saying? I can't quite come up with it, but it says, courage is not the absence of fear, it's the ability to act in spite of it, right? It's something like that, right? It's not the absence of fear, in spite of it, it's the energy needed to propel us into action. Great. And now the next little saying from our Jesus, our friend, our brother, talking about, you know, sparrows. And I love this because it's more about not fearing. It's more about not fearing. Sometimes I've been in that place, maybe you all have, where I have felt abandoned by God. Anyone? Yeah. I felt all alone. Even in a faith community, I felt cut off from the sunlight of the Spirit, as it says. And I will feel that God does not know me, that God is not present for me. Of course, that's me making that happen, because in reality, there is no separation from God. Nothing can separate us from the love of God and the light of the Spirit. Nothing. If we are of God, if we are made by God, if we are the children of God, then God knows us. God knows everything about us and values us and will protect us. We are one with God. And then the next reading, do not think that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I have not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to set a son against his father and a daughter against her mother, in-law against in-law, and one's foes will be members of one's own household. Now that's just hard to believe, isn't it? Can we just forget that one? Well, I think it's important, you know. We usually think of Jesus as that gentle lamb, the sacrificial lamb, right? I like that Jesus. To me, that's kind of like the gay Jesus, you know, but I love that Jesus. However, Jesus was one tough dude. He went about upsetting the social order, upending expectations people had of him and one another and principalities. He thumbed his nose at business as usual in the temple, the countryside, the villages. He didn't care who it was. And that riled up a few people, didn't it? And look what happened. But that's another story for another day. So that sword, right? I don't like weapons and that sort of thing myself, but that sword, I like to think about as a sword cutting through the illusion of life, the illusions of life that keep us from seeing one another as brothers and sisters, as one. I like that sword as slicing through prejudices, slashing classism, severing the roots of institutional racism, shearing away class and race privilege, cutting away at heterosexism and homophobia and misogyny. Now, I don't know about you, but that's the kind of sword that I could go for, one that does that kind of work. And also, Jesus had nothing against families, right? He loved families and understood the necessity of them in all their different forms. In his ministry, he saw many different kinds of families. Of course, when you do queer exegesis of some of them, you can see the gay families in the scriptures, like the Roman centurion and his slave. Come on, you know. But anyway, that's for another time. Also, you know, unlike, you know, in our government, some of our governments, they don't think all families, don't value all families. But Jesus did. But what we're told That true discipleship will upset the allegiances we have, because when we place God first, when we prioritizing the coming of the kingdom here and now, it will rearrange our family systems. It'll just happen. It may seem disloyal to our parents or children if we commit, really commit to this holy work. They may not be on board with it. They might not be down with us spending all our time and money, you know, doing witnessing and being disciples out there. They might even try to hold us back. I've had that experience. Are you sure you want to do that? Don't you just want to, you know, stay home and be with us, and rather than, you know, going away 1,000 miles for, you know, all that stuff? Don't listen to it. Your family loves you no matter what. Okay? So, if we rearrange our priorities, often family members and friends will feel threatened that we may want to take away some of the things that they have as high priorities, you know? And that's threatening to them, you know? I don't have to list all of those things that there are, okay? But sometimes people, they feel you're going to take something away from them. But think of St. Francis of Assisi. I love Francis. This is his cross. Rich guy, right? For generations, his father was so rich. They had all these tapestries and fabrics and everything. Lived a life of luxury, and he turned his back on all of this comfort. Stripped himself naked and walked away because he placed God first. And he went about to witness to that faith. But look at what he did in our Western culture. He changed the way we live in the West, and he brought about the first reformation of the Catholic Church. Okay, now then, all of this leads up to the next verse. Whoever loves mother or father more than me is not worthy of me, and whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me, and whoever does not take up the cross and follow me is not worthy of me. I used to have trouble with that passage. But what we're talking about here is single-minded purpose. This is what we're talking about. God first, everything else second. Got that? God first, everything else second. And this is not just true for us as individuals, but as a church community. We need to place the greater good, God's will, ahead of our own needs and desires. We need to do that. And now, the bit about the cross, right? For me, this means the life of spirit. Carrying that cross is the life of the spirit. It means committing to personal growth, committing to spiritual growth, committing to social justice work. This means giving ourselves over to those life lessons, karma, that we need to deal with, rather than avoiding them by distracting ourselves with all that stuff that's out there. It means getting down and dirty in this business of life, of getting our hands dirty. Our cross is those things which burden us. So we have to look at that stuff so we can throw it off. Okay. And then, I just have two more to go. Those who find their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it. Now, this is not about martyrdom, okay? I already talked about three martyrs, right? I don't think they chose that. I think it happened to them, right? And we don't need to do that. It's not in many of our cards to be martyrs to our faith or for anything else for that matter. But those who achieve success in the limited realm of illusion of this world, you know, will ultimately lose it. You got that? We'll ultimately lose it, either when we die and we can't take it with us, or because our soul, which knows what we need and want and why we came into this life to experience, and if we're not doing it, our soul, our spirit, well, they'll make it happen. They'll make it happen. They'll change our life situation so that we have to reprioritize our life, so we have to deal with our stuff. You know? And those who give up the life of the material world and put God first will find and keep forever an inner life that is authentic, spirit-filled, service-filled, love-filled, and will have it forever. So, in closing, can you imagine what a different world we had if we all could put God first? Not even all the time, but just more of the time. Right? We got to take little steps sometimes. What our world would be like. You know, and not like those crazy, rabid fundamentalists that are around the world who put God first, but then somehow mix it with their own insanity or their own demons, right? You know what I'm talking about. I don't have to say it. You know, if we all listen to our hearts and let our hearts lead us beside the still waters, if we allowed God to lead us to those places we must go, we must go in order to heal, to learn, to evolve. That if we let God inspire us and empower us to make this a more perfect world. Can you just imagine? Anyway, by the way, that fundraiser in Chicago, I did manage to climb up on top of the table. God must have been with me. I just didn't know it.